The Vintage Gamer, Episode 31, Nuclear War.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. Each episode, I take a look at a game from the past, either a board game, card game, role-playing game, or computer game. And if you like what you hear, you can download more great episodes, or even subscribe, at www.thevintagegamer.net. And so, yes, I am back, at least temporarily. It has been a while. The deal is that the book is still eating up a lot of my time, and I've actually had some other distractions, which I'll get into in a moment here. So I guess I'll just leap into the news. Vintage Gamer News! Alright, enough of that. The big other distraction is that I actually have been on a job hunt since about March. So that was a big, both mental and just time-consuming distraction, which kind of explains why things died off around then. But I do have a new job now. I'm working for NVIDIA Corporation, which, for those who are not aware, is a... basically, it's a chip company. They design and produce chips. And I'm working in the graphics division on the OpenGL device driver, for those of you who know what that is. It's basically the interface between the programmer and the hardware. One advantage of this is that since I'm no longer working for a game company, that means I can review any game I want, even some of those games from the past that I felt a little uncomfortable reviewing. So that may come into play. We'll see. The other thing that has been a bit of a distraction was Origins. There was a trip involved there. I went up to see my parents, and then we went to Origins itself. Origins was a great time. Some of the highlights, well, there's the panel, which you've heard already. It's a great group of people. I thought it was a really, really good panel. Scott Nicholson did a great job of moderating and keeping things going, and some really good questions to ask, too. Besides the panel, I actually spent a good deal of time hanging out with podcasters that weekend. Of course, there's Paul Tevis of Have Games Will Travel. And then there's Chris Miller and KJ of House of the Harping Monkey, Kingfish and the Vicar of GeekLevel.com, and JJ and Victor from Fistful of Comics and Games. So I actually spent a lot of time socializing at this Origins, more than I usually do. And the high point of that was, of course, dinner at Schmidt's with most of those people, all going out and eating way too much German food, and of course those giant cream puffs. I want to give a big thank you to the Geek Label guys for that. Of course, I went to Origins to play games, not just to hang out with people. And the game of the show for me was actually Pizza Box Baseball from On the Line Game Company. Eric Smith was there demoing it, a prototype, and I ended up playing with Jay Little of the Metagamers. It is a great little card game, does a really nice job of simulating the game of baseball without getting bogged down in pitch-by-pitch kind of statistics. If it actually had that game on sale, I would have bought it, and I'm looking forward to it. Other games, we picked up Stonehenge, which is the anthology game being published by Paizo. I believe it's under the imprint of Titanic Games, which is a set of game pieces with designs from 5 designers, and there are actually more designers contributing to it. I believe Andrew Looney is coming up with a design, and there's an expansion coming out. And, of course, we had to pick up the Arkham Horror expansion, The King in Yellow, which looks to be more deadly than the usual Arkham Horror, particularly if you just play that expansion. The biggest disappointment was not really taking the time to sit down and play Jenseits von Theben, and then driving back and listening to the review on the spiel and going, how did I miss that? I did actually watch Rick Thornquist play a little bit and like, oh, it looked kind of interesting. But I should have spent a little more time looking at that one. Finally, the kid had a great time. We ended up taking her to Origins, her first real convention. She had a great time playing in the kids' room and dressing up like a superhero, the Pink Tornado. And she ended up winning the City of Heroes costume contest in the kids category. So we're definitely bringing her back next year, and we're actually planning to go through the entire con. Usually we cut it short by a day. All in all, Origins was a really great show, and I'm looking forward to next year. Speaking of conventions, Gen Con just finished up recently, and the Ennies were announced, which is just sort of their the Gen Con Awards. And I want to offer a big congratulations to those who won the Best Podcast. The Silver Award went to Yog Radio, and the Gold went to Paul Tevis and Have Games Will Travel. So a big congratulations to those people. And speaking of Gen Con, it was announced that Fantasy Flight Games will be reprinting Cosmic Encounter, a rethemed version of Dune. It's going to be rethemed in the Twilight Imperium universe, and Borderlands. So all of those great Eon games. So there's that vague rumor explained. And the mysterious game did turn out to be Dune after all. Other gaming news, I want to mention the Board Game Podcaster Awards. It's the first year where the board game podcasters got together and tried to do awards like some of the blogs do, and of course there's the Board Game Geek Awards. There were five categories this year. There was Best Gateway Game, which has been announced on onboardgames.net. There is Best Game from a New Publisher, which has been announced on Garrett's Games and Geekiness. There's the Innovative Concept, which was announced on Board Game Babylon. The Best Game from a Small Publisher, announced on the Dice Tower. And the Game of the Year, announced on the Metagamers. I'm going to be mysterious and say that you should go to all of those podcasts and find out who won, just to encourage you to go listen to them all. I'm sure you can find them other places on the net. I contributed in a small way. I was very busy with my job search, so I wasn't able to contribute as much as I would like, but I'm hoping to be a little more involved next year. And finally, to wrap up the news, I want to talk a little bit about Dragon Con. I will be at Dragon Con, and I have at least one appearance, which will be the usual gaming podcasters panel. At least it's usual now, because it's now a tradition, having been the second year in a row. That will be Saturday at 2:30 p.m. I, as I said, will be there, as well as Bobby Blackwolf, Jeff Himmelman, Sam Chupp, Jeremiah, and Don Dem. I will also be not participating, at least attending the Parsec Awards, partially because my lovely wife, Mer Lafferty, is up for, gosh, I'm not sure how many awards she's up for. I think she's up for four. But I am also nominated for a Parsec. And I'm up against some really good company there. Paul Tevis, again, Have Games Will Travel, has been nominated. Sons of Cryos has been nominated. And Pulp Gamer has been nominated for two of their shows. So some very, very good company there. I'm not going to lie, I'd love to win, but I don't think I have much of a chance against those people. Anyway, I look forward to seeing who the winner will be. I don't think any of them are a bad choice. So that's about it for news. With that, and not much further ado, we'll go to my review of Nuclear War right after this.
The new and improved Geek Label Radio. We've rebuilt it. Better. Stronger. Faster. Every week, join the Kingfish.
He likes to dip into the icky.
Super producer Billy Flynn.
Let me see if I can crack some code.
And the Vicar.
I give you the Vicar. The campaign artard.
As they rub down in Vaseline.
Holy crap.
No!
Evil, evil, evil.
Join hands.
So good, I actually now have to go home and clean my pants.
And share their feelings.
I was taking them on four at a time.
I don't remember any details.
In a totally non-threatening, hetero kind of way. Hear from industry veterans.
This is Tracy Hickman.
Hi, this is Jim Lee.
Hi, this is George Takei.
And your hosts, as they opine pointlessly.
Let's talk about farting in public. Oh, let's.
Yes. About comics, gaming, movies, and geekly news.
Orville Redenbacher has risen from the grave.
I knew it. You owe me $6.
Geek Label Radio.
I like it. It's good.
It's a total waste of time. But what the hell? So's EverQuest.
Oh, that just happened.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
Do a little dance.
Make a little love.
Get down tonight.
That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, on to Nuclear War. Nuclear War is a 2-4 player card game designed by Doug Malowicki, and it was first self-published by him in 1965. Now, the game went out of print, but Rick Loomis of Flying Buffalo ended up picking up in 1972. What happened was that he had released a game called Nuclear Destruction, and people were coming around to his booth going, hey, is this an expansion to Nuclear War? And so he was wondering what this Nuclear War game was, and so he sought it out and ended up buying the publishing rights to it and has been selling it ever since. It is available as the base set Nuclear War and three additional expansions. The general idea of the game, of all four of these games actually, is that each person is playing a country during a Cold War. And the goal of the game is to wipe out everyone else. Now, there are two ways you can do this. You can use propaganda to bring people from their country to your country. Now, this is obviously very efficient because you're taking from them and you're gaining people in your country. Or you can use nuclear weapons and just try to wipe them out. Less efficient, but perhaps in a sick sort of way, more fun. The way this is managed is through, as I mentioned, a hand of cards. And this game is very simple. There are only four different card types. There are propaganda cards, which do as you expect. You play them, and they allow you to steal from another player. There are delivery device cards, which are missiles and bombers. And there are warhead cards. The way this works is that you need an appropriate delivery device to deliver a warhead. So, for example, you need a Saturn missile to deliver a 100 megaton bomb. And this is a one-time use. Once you play those two cards, then the effect happens and cards are discarded. The fourth type of card is a secret card, and also some top secret cards, and I'll discuss those a little bit more later. Now, the players get dealt a random number of population cards. Basically, you can think of this as your money. The number of population that you have is hidden. And as I said, this is random, so people will start off with differing levels of population. After that, you get 9 nuclear war cards, which are the 4 card types that I described before. Everybody starts by putting 2 cards face down. The first card you put down will be the first card you play in the game, and the second card you put down will be the second card you play in the game, on your second turn, as it were. And once that's done, play begins. So the first player starts by drawing a new card and places a third card face down in their queue. And then they reveal that first card face up. That is the card that they will play. And they have to do whatever it is. If it's propaganda, as I said, they take the population from another player. If it's a delivery device, then they set it aside. And they wait for a warhead card to be played. Now, this warhead has to be the next card up. If it's not, then that delivery device will just be discarded. Now, if the warhead card comes up, you have to have the appropriate delivery device to drop it off, otherwise it gets discarded. If it has both, then you choose a player to attack, you spin the nuclear fallout spinner, or you can roll a die and look it up at the table, and this will add an additional effect. So you can have like a radiation effect, which doubles the damage or triples the damage, or they can have, you know, it can have other effects, like no effect at all. The worst possible delivery and warhead combination that you can do is that Saturn rocket and 100 megaton bomb, which kills 25 million people. And you triple that, that's 75. Now, as long as you play propaganda cards, as long as everybody plays propaganda cards, everyone is at peace. Once the warheads start falling, war has begun. Propaganda cards, at this point, have no effect. And the only way you can end this period of war, this state of war, is if one country is wiped out. But, remember, all those cards are queued up. So, even if war ends briefly, there's a good chance that war is going to start up very quickly because someone's going to have a warhead and a missile queued up and ready to fire. So that's the basic game. Those fourth cards, the secret and top secret cards, are played immediately, even at the start of the game. And what these do is just do nasty things to players. They could be nasty things to other players, which you get to choose, or they could be nasty things that happen to you. One famous example of this is the top secret card, Super Germ. You choose an opponent, and they're doing some sort of biological warfare research, and it backfires on them and kills 25 million of their population. Now, addition to all of those things, there are some special things you can do. First of all, if you are attacked, you can respond to an attack with an anti-missile. And what this does is it blocks the attack and then changes the current turn to your turn. And the anti-missile has to be against a particular type of missile. Another thing you can do on your turn is to put down part of your hand. You can put down two cards, a delivery and a warhead card, face up in front of you as a deterrent. Now, you're not actually playing the cards. You're basically revealing a part of your hand. You're just saying that you have it. And when it comes time to play it, you just play it normally. You would pick it up and put it face down in that queue, as you would if you were playing it from your hand. Another special card is the B-70 Bomber. Now, normally, when you fire a missile, it has a fixed payload on it, and that's it. The missile's gone. The B-70 Bomber can carry up to 50 megatons. And it doesn't have to deliver that all at once. So you can play the B-70 bomber, then play a 10-megaton bomb, then a 20-megaton bomb, and then another 20-megaton bomb. And you can play all of those against different players. The final aspect of the game is something called final retaliation, which is that once a player gets wiped out, whether that's through propaganda cards, or secret cards, or with an actual attack, gets a chance to basically do a last lick against all the other players by using their delivery system and warhead cards. So they can pair those up and play them however they like against the rest of the players, taking them in turn. People can respond with anti-missiles if they like. The last person to respond will become the one who actually gets the new turn. One thing that can happen with this is that another player can get wiped out, and they get a chance for final retaliation. So this can go on and on. Starting to see that this game has a certain amount of dark humor to it. The winner, so-called winner of the game, is the last player remaining with at least 1 million population. And as I've kind of hinted here, once the war begins, it's very hard to stop because the missiles are usually just queued up. It's not in your best interest to play any more propaganda cards because, well, they're useless. So you might as well keep throwing those missiles out there, and so total annihilation eventually happens. A few comments on the game mechanism here. I first saw this sort of queuing up mechanism in Killer Bunnies. It's the same sort of thing. You have to play your next card and the card after that in this hidden queue, and you don't have an opportunity to change it. I didn't think it really worked in Killer Bunnies. I didn't really understand why I was doing it. Of course, there were other things about Killer Bunnies I didn't really understand, like, why am I playing this game just to buy lottery tickets? But anyway, not my favorite game. But in this game, it really, really works. And I suspect Killer Bunnies probably took it from this game, if I had to guess. Because it gives you that sense of, we're committed, and we don't have any chance to change things now. I guess we might as well keep firing off missiles. It really gives you that feeling of what would happen in a all-out nuclear conflict. So that's the original game. That's Nuclear War. At some point, the guys realized that the game was out-of-date technology-wise. I mean, you basically had missiles and out-of-date bombers. And so they created a new version, which is called Nuclear Escalation. It was published in 1983, which has updated weapons and secrets. And this is kind of both an expansion and a standalone game. You can play this game all by itself, or you can combine it with Nuclear War and create a game with more players. They then did the same again with a game called Nuclear Proliferation, published in 1992, which, in addition to the updated weapons and things, also added special powers for the countries. And then again, in 2004, there was Weapons of Mass Destruction, which is a kind of smaller game/expansion. And as I said, all of these can be combined together to create one big mega nuclear war game. There are also some other smaller expansion card sets and individual expansion cards like Origin promos and things like that. And I believe all of these things are available at the Flying Buffalo site, or, of course, you can buy them at the conventions where they show up. These are all still in print. Isn't it great I'm talking about a game that's still in print? A game from 1965. Isn't that awesome? Now, I've played this, and I actually recommend getting two of the sets and combining them together. With one set, you can only play with four players, and it really doesn't feel like there's enough players there. It doesn't feel chaotic enough. I really recommend getting two sets and combining them and playing with, say, six players. It really gives you a better experience. It'll be a longer experience, obviously, because you know you have more people to try and wipe out. Finally, there are two computer versions of this game. There is a DOS version, which is available from Flying Buffalo. You can also play it online at GameTable Online. I believe on GameTable you can play for the first, I can't remember, it's the first 2 weeks or first 2 months for free. So you can sign up and check it out. As a final note, I want to say a little bit about Doug Malwicki, or is it Doug Malevitsky? Anyway, he is obviously best known in the games industry for nuclear war, but he is also sort of a renaissance man. He's an accomplished rocket scientist. He worked on the Saturn V. He has worked on creating boosters for a personal jetpack. And he also worked on the motorcycle that Evel Knievel was planning to use to jump the Grand Canyon. And has done some other work in various aeronautical areas. He also created a giant car-chomping robot called Robosaurus. And he's also been a judge on Junkyard Wars / Scrap Heap Challenge. If you want more information about Doug Malwicki, go check out Carnosaurus.com. He's got a neat little fun website there. So that's about it for Nuclear War. I recommend it. Go check it out. It's a fun, sick little game. I'll be back with a wrap-up and discussion of future shows right after this.
Are you a procrastinator? Have you been thinking, well, I've heard good things about the patio book series Heaven and Hell, but I've got other stuff to listen to? Well, hey, don't take my word for it. I just write the dang thing.
Hi, this is Matthew Wayne Selznick, the author of Brave Men Run, a novel of the Sovereign Era at bravemenrun.com, and I'm here to tell you, Murray Lafferty's podcast novels Heaven and Hell are a literary afterlife amusement park, full of surprises, terror, and joy. If you haven't visited, now's the time, as a whole new land has opened. Earth. No lines, no waiting. Listen to Heaven, Hell, and get ready for Earth.
Season 3 of Heaven is dropping June 23rd at patiobooks.com. And if you haven't listened to Heaven or Hell yet, they're still available at patiobooks.com. They're all three ready for you. Now what are you waiting for?
Okay, so that was Nuclear War. Or should I say Nuclear War? Seems a little more appropriate, don't you think? I want to wrap up here by talking about some of the games I want to review in the future. I spoke earlier in the podcast about the reprint of Dune, and as it turns out, I actually ended up buying a copy of Dune on eBay before this was announced. I was planning on reviewing it. Now I feel like I clearly must review it just to give people a sense of what the game is like. Now, the reprint won't be coming out until, I think, 2008. So you'll have plenty of time to decide whether you actually want to buy it. Of course, it also means I have plenty of time to review it. I do actually have a copy of Titan, speaking of games being reprinted, and I've been thinking about reviewing that before the Valley Games copy comes out. And speaking of Valley Games, I have a copy of Hannibal, Rome vs. Carthage coming, and I'll definitely be reviewing that when it shows up. And I got a copy of Upfront on eBay as well. I had borrowed a copy from a friend of mine and had to return it. So I'll be reviewing that. And I also have a copy of We the People I've been meaning to dig into. Yes, those of you in the know will recognize that all of these are Avalon Hill games, so it is feeling a little Avalon Hill heavy. I don't know, I'm interested in doing all of these, but in the interest of variety, I might rethink my plans a little bit. If you have suggestions, of course, please send them to me and encourage me to increase the variety, as it were. One good place you could do that is, of course, at DragonCon, where I will be this coming weekend, just to remind you again. And as a further reminder, that panel is Saturday at 2:30 p.m., so please, if you're there, show up and show your support for the gaming podcasters. But if you're not going to be at DragonCon and you have feedback on the news, the show, or, of course, the podcast in general, you can send that via email to vintagejim@gmail.com. Or you can leave comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net. Or you can leave it at all the usual places, Skype, BoardGameGeek, RPG.net. Oh, and speaking of BoardGameGeek, there's also a new guild for The Vintage Gamer, so you can leave comments there as well. Or, if you're a member of the guild, please feel free to start up a new thread on any sort of vintage gaming topic you may like. In any case, with all of these, I'll do my best to respond promptly. I know I've promised this in the past, as no, I haven't always come through, but I do what I can. And thus concludes yet another explosive episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres, and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The Vintage Gamer will return, someday, with another game from the past. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.